I'm Richard Freiberg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 133, for the week starting 15 September 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like massive this or massive that.
No, the word massive is only used by screechy red tops, or should that be blue tops? On Talk Central this week, we talk about the big Apple keynote.
Also this week, we chat about the expanding VOD wars in South Africa, Siyabonga Tshwele's promise to fix the telecoms department, Telkom's 1 million fibre homes, and progress on broadband spectrum allocation.
Well, that's a lot, but before we get to it, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. Hi, Richard.
How's it, Duncan?
Good, thanks. So there's a lot to get to, so let's dive straight into it. Did you watch the Apple keynote?
I did, and it was much of what we expected from the rumors we saw, but it was still nice to see these things come to fruition, and I guess we're all quite happy to see iPad Pro in the mix, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Sure. I saw a lot of comments on people on Twitter. I didn't actually watch the keynote this time around. I just kind of watched a couple of live blogs and watched the comments on Twitter, and a lot of people expressing a bit of disappointment in the fact that Apple has become a bit boring, kind of predictable in what it's doing, very iterative in terms of the new iPhone. But I mean, that's what we've come to expect in recent years. I mean, apart from the watch, which everyone was expecting anyway, Apple has become isn't about revolutionary products anymore.
They've never really been. They've always kind of been lagging with the latest kind of trends. But when they brought out a product, they seem to
perfect
bring out the right version for that time. And I guess we've kind of become spoilt as consumers as well to expect something every year or every 2 year cycles from companies like Apple. When the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus works very well.
I mean, great phones, yeah.
They are superb devices. Just enhancing them where needed, bringing those new technologies.
Yeah.
I'm a happy consumer for those. I wouldn't necessarily be upgrading, but it's also good to know that I won't have to feel obliged to upgrade because there's this new phone out that's a new iteration.
That's true, yeah. But if you're still on an older iPhone 5 or 5S, then this is obviously a great upgrade path.
Oh, definitely.
Especially if you're still on that small iPhone 5 screen.
But a lot of people prefer it. I know some people that won't upgrade to the new iPhone 6, even though they can. They just prefer the old, so they get another iPhone 5S or just keep the old one.
Yeah.
I guess in time, those kind of people will upgrade because,
they have to.
You see the benefit of a larger screen.
But But the iPhone, the 6, the standard 6, not the Plus, is a small phone. I mean, it's not... certainly in the Android world, it's by Android standards, it's pretty small.
It is. And that's, but for many people, it hits the sweet spot. It just comes down to personal preference. With the new iPhones bringing in, that Force Touch, what's that, 3D Touch?
3D Touch,
call it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, that was the biggest advancement in the iPhone this year, but it's something you can't really give a view on until you've actually had a chance to play with it. It looks cool. I mean, from the demos, it looks pretty cool. But the proof will be in the pudding, I guess.
Yeah.
What you actually use it for. The iPad Pro, I think, was the more interesting announcement.
Very much.
Some people have joked on Twitter, Apple has just invented the Microsoft Surface. Kind of an expensive device if you think about it, especially if you buy the Apple Pencil, and Steve Jobs must be spinning in his grave over that one, and the keyboard, $179 for a keyboard, really.
Yeah, but I think this is now, this is going to give a very a niche part of the market the opportunity to move away from MacBook completely and have a device. And I'm thinking of a graphic designer or a creative person that doesn't require necessarily all the world's computing power.
Yeah.
Or maybe for traveling, or maybe for going out on a whatever you want to call it, a project excursion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just to have that device to be able to do it. I think it's interesting enough to warrant that segment in the market.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a big seller for Microsoft NetPen with this. I've heard a lot of for Apple. Sorry, what did I say?
Microsoft.
I meant for Apple. But I've seen a lot of good comments from American journalists who were speaking, who were actually at the event trying out the tablet and the pen, and they say it's much better than the best Wacom they've used.
Oh right.
And I think that says a lot.
Okay.
You know those Wacom tablets.
It's definitely a market there, and it's not a tiny market either. It'd be interesting to see what impact this has on Microsoft Surface sales, because Surface has been doing quite well actually in the States.
Yeah, but I've never really thought the operating system was where it should be. Where you can possibly argue that the iPad's operating system is very good for its intended purpose.
Yes.
Microsoft has always been lagging a bit in that department. I just hope they catch up with Windows 10. You know, make that the operating system it should have been, and then Surface, in my opinion, will become a true competitor to something like the iPad Pro.
But yeah, I mean the proof in the pudding again will be the apps. I mean you on this you probably don't want to run cut down apps of desktop apps. You probably want you want something akin to the full version of Photoshop on this device, for example.
Yeah, definitely.
And then I suppose the question is this tablet powerful enough in terms of its hardware configuration to run something like full Photoshop?
Well, if they can design apps that speaks to that hardware configuration specifically, and there's no wasted wasted lines of code.
Yeah.
I think it's possible. They did show a demo of an app that they're going to be launching soon that will allow you to do CAD style drawings just using the pen. So you know, the application, it takes the sketch information and turns it into actual CAD lines or CAD points. And it seems interesting enough. It seems powerful enough to run that software.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to see how it does with something like Adobe, which is notoriously power hungry.
Yeah, indeed, especially when you're editing large video or image files.
Oh, yeah.
But interesting one. For me, the biggest news out of the this year's keynote, or this September keynote, was the enhancements to the Apple TV product, and specifically the integration of a microphone and Siri into the remote control, which I think is very cool.
Yes, and they've also turned this into a gaming device now, so now you can play your iTunes games at least.
Yeah.
That to me is a biggie.
Yeah. The start of Apple's perhaps move into the video gaming market.
I mean, they've got the platform, they've got the consumers. Mm. It's just giving them another outlet to enjoy some like Angry Birds in front of a screen with a family around you.
But the integration of Siri, I think, is pretty cool. It's I forget what the exact phrase they used during the keynote was, but you know, I think it was what did he say or what did she say?
Yes,
and then
it
goes back 15 seconds so you can rewatch it. I mean, that happens so often when you're watching a movie or something. What was that?
Yes, and it can also bring up the closed captions for that, so you can actually read what she said as opposed
Just
listening.
Yeah,
if you can't understand the voice, it's very clever.
Yeah,
sorry,
carry on.
And the appification of everything. I mean, obviously we know that that's what Apple does, but bringing it to the TV as a full on, and this is the platform for TV now. Mm. With their weight behind it, I think we're going to see a lot of other guys trying to embed something like this in their device. Maybe specific ports for the Apple TV to connect to, because it's becoming its own platform.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting to see.
Yeah, I mean, Microsoft and Google no doubt follow, and Amazon. Amazon's also got a voice assistant now.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what it's called. It's very interesting. And I think that this is a perfect application for a voice assistant. Mm. Because, you know, using a remote control to interface with the web on a TV is not a pleasant experience. The last thing you want to be doing is sitting there trying to type in, using the remote control to try and type in, you know, letters on an on-screen keyboard or something like that. Mm. Being able to talk to your TV is much better, and the application is almost endless, and Siri and its competitors from Google and Microsoft and others, and Facebook as well, has announced a voice assistant called M. They've become pretty good now, and I think that if you want to control your TV from your couch, you're more likely to want to speak to it than have to press a confusing number of buttons or try and work with an on-screen keyboard.
Mm,
you just say to it, search the web for Tech Central, and you know, it pops up
the podcast. The remote also has this touchpad built in, which I think, you know, again, look at how Apple has taken something like their small remote and just made it a little bit more functional, because with that obviously comes the gaming side of it, but, you know, being able to scroll left and right where you need to.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like the look and feel of it.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So, I mean, I think that was the most exciting thing out of this year's keynote. Well, and which was admittedly a rather dull keynote.
A 2-hour keynote.
Was it 2 hours?
Yeah, I think it was about 2 hours. Two and a half hours, maybe.
Good grief. Yeah. They used to be a lot tighter, weren't they? I mean, when Steve Jobs originally started doing these keynotes, I seem to recall they were 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah. Also, let's not forget that Steve Jobs, in one of the early keynotes for the iPhone, I think, when he launched the iPhone, he said, "Who needs a stylus?"
Yes.
Remember that? Yeah,
yeah. Which is hence him spinning in his brain over the pencil.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Anyway, enough of Apple for this podcast. Let's move on to talk about Spectrum. And finally, there's some action happening. We've been waiting for years for the government and the regulator to get a move on with allocating Spectrum in both the digital dividend bands and at 2.6 gigahertz, and the operators desperately need access to the spectrum. And finally, we've got some movement, although be it not from government, but from the regulator, which has published something called an information memorandum, which is quite a detailed document setting out exactly how they intend to allocate the spectrum, principally by means of an auction, which is an interesting move, because we haven't done, as far as I know, we haven't done spectrum auctions in South Africa before. Certainly previous spectrum allocations to the mobile operators were done on a beauty contest basis, and they simply had to pay a fee for access. I think it was something tiny that the mobile operators paid for their 3G spectrum, if I recall correctly. I think, I stand to be corrected, but I think MTN and Vodacom paid 5 million rand each for their 3G allocation, which in the scheme of things is absolutely is peanuts.
Yeah, nothing.
But we're going for a spectrum auction this time around. Depending on how many bidders there are, it could get quite expensive. So they've set out this document, this information memorandum, in anticipation of government publishing its final policy on high-demand spectrum, which, by the way, the communications or the telecommunications minister, Siyabonga Ntwele, has promised will be finished and published by within the next 6 months, by the end of March next year, which is good news. Let's see if it actually happens, because politicians, of course, well known for making promises and not delivering on them.
Yeah.
But he seems to be quite bullish about getting that policy out now and actually fixing some of the mess in that department. But so ICASA has published this document, and they're looking to they've set out how they intend to allocate spectrum in both the 7 and 800 megahertz bands. Those are the digital dividend bands that will be freed up through digital TV migration. And also the 2.6 gigahertz band, which is a huge chunk of spectrum, basically running all the way from 2500 megahertz to 2690 megahertz. So 190 megahertz of spectrum at 2.6. And a couple of potentially contentious things in this document, which isn't final yet. It's still open to public comment. Probably the most contentious thing is that they've said that prospective users of the digital dividend spectrum will have to pay for the free distribution of digital set-top boxes to households. Now, I'm not sure how happy the telecommunications operators are going to be about subsidizing set-top boxes for another industry.
That doesn't seem right. Seems a bit messy.
I mean, they've argued in the past that their contributions to the Universal Service Fund have primarily... the Universal Service Fund is primarily made up of contributions from the telecommunications operators, and the telecoms operators have objected in the past to that Universal Service Fund being used to subsidize set-top boxes.
Yeah.
They believe it should be used to provide services, telecom services, in underserviced areas, which seems like a fair argument. So I'm sure there's going to be some objection, at least, to this proposal that some of the proceeds of the auctions are used to fund subsidies for set-top boxes. But what's very interesting is that ICASA hasn't actually... Well, the section of the document is very badly worded, so it's not possible to tell from the document whether ICASA is intending that the free set-top boxes will be available to everyone, not just the poorer households, or whether it's only going to be for poorer households. Unfortunately, that section of the document is very badly worded, so we're going to need some clarity from ICASA on that one. But it's positive, I think, that ICASA is finally moving ahead with this, and it's probably an indication that the politicians are also are also getting ready, and the bureaucrats at the Department of Telecoms are getting closer to releasing that final policy, which the ICASA needs to license the spectrum. But they provided an extraordinary amount of detail here. They talked a bit about, for example, about how the auction is going to work. They're going to use something called a simultaneous multi-round ascending auction. And they're creating lot categories or lots of spectrum for which operators are going to bid. You know, the problem with these auctions, I guess, is that before they happen, there's the opportunity for all sorts of deal making behind the scenes and
trade-offs. Open itself to a lot of that, unfortunately.
Yeah. The temptation for collusion between the operators, hey, we'll bid for this if you bid for that, and don't bid for this and don't push the price up on that. I think there's a huge opportunity for that behind the scenes. I think it's important that the media actually keeps a very close eye on this whole process, and that the whole thing is done in an incredibly transparent way, because the last thing we need is for backhanders and for collusion between industry players and you know, all sorts of nefarious activities behind the scenes. But the sort of thing, not just in South Africa but around the world, has lent itself to that sort of collusive behaviour.
Yeah, let's just hope we get access to this low end spectrum so that we can all benefit from the services, or at least the quality of services.
Exactly. I mean, this spectrum is what's going to allow South Africa to really bridge the digital divide and get LTE into the rural areas. The other proposal, which I actually wrote about in a column some months ago after a discussion with one of the operators, they're proposing that they adopt the model adopted in Germany, where operators who wanted spectrum and the digital dividend were required to provide coverage in less populated areas before they were able to use it in more populated areas. In other words, start from the outside and move in. So provide rural coverage first, and then provide coverage in the cities, and that incentivizes the operators to build quickly, because they want to get to the cities.
Yes,
so they
quickly
build the rural areas, and then come into the cities. So that's a
good thing. Yeah.
It's an interesting proposal. So a very interesting document, well worth a read through. It's available on the ICASA website, and the pieces, the summary, our summary of it is obviously available on Tech Central. But I think kudos to ICASA for publishing this document, and finally we're starting to see some action in this area, which should have happened, let's be frank, years ago.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, let's hope this happens without too much controversy, please.
It's almost guaranteed to be controversial. It's almost guaranteed something's going to happen. Anyway,
at least we'll be getting fiber before then, so that's a good thing.
Indeed. Anyway, controversy is good for the media, so
yeah,
we'll keep an eye on it. Very interesting what's happening in the video on demand space at the moment. It seems like barely a week goes by now without a new player coming into the market. This week, for example, later this week, is the launch of a new service from PCCW, which is the global arm of Hong Kong Telecom. We don't know the details yet. They're going to be launching later this week, presumably another competitor to the likes of Showmax, which was launched a few weeks ago from NASPAS. But let's count them now. How many do we have in this market? We've got the PCCW offering. We've got MTN's Front Row. We've got NASPAS' Showmax. We've got Times Media Group's Vidi. Who am I missing?
The unofficial users of Netflix.
Well, Netflix is coming next year. Then the rumor is they're coming early next year, so that's five. And Orange has announced that they're coming to market with the service. That's six.
Yes.
Six players that have launched or announced intentions to launch in the space of a few months.
It's quite interesting. We saw a similar thing with the audio streaming services last year as well. Within a span of a year or two, there was seven or eight, I think. I don't know how many of them are still surviving.
They're all here still, I think. I mean, Deezer's here. They work through Vodacom. Radio is here. Amazingly, they're still 60 rand a month, despite the fact that the rand has probably fallen by 50% in the last year.
Symphy Africa, I still use them.
Symphy still going. They're working through a company owned by Prime Media, if I recall. Who else? I mean, the big guys are not here. Spotify's not here. Apple Music is launched here.
Yeah.
They're all still going, as far as I know.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
Is the market really big enough for all of these guys, especially if we're looking at the video players?
I don't know. I mean, it's a kind of a global market, so maybe, I mean, these are all global players, so maybe they, maybe they just feel they have to be here, even if it's a loss-making. This market is loss-making for them. Mm. It's not really that important. Maybe they just feel they need to be in all the markets.
And didn't MTN announce that they're going to zero-rate front row
they did.
Data?
They
I mean, did. That to me that's is significant. That's where it's a big...
That's huge.
Now
that's
you
huge.
Start differentiating yourself for some interesting things.
That's very, very interesting. Yeah, VD's got something similar. I forget how it works. They've got some sort of scheme where they pay for your data.
Oh, yes, they do pay for some of your bandwidth.
Some of your bandwidth, yeah. I'm not quite sure how that works, but... MTN has announced that they're going to zero rate. Now, that must be a loss maker for them doing that. But
I wonder they can't give Afrihost enough data.
So we've got all these players. I think Showmax is probably the leading contender right now, simply because of the amount of money they've put into that operation and the LastPass behind them. But interesting market, and maybe they will all survive. Maybe you don't have to have millions of customers to be successful in the VOD market.
It'll be interesting to see how MultiChoice's numbers are dropping, or if they are dropping in relation to the launch of these new services. I know a few people that's recently, over the last 6 months, have cancelled their DSTV subscription and moved over to
streaming
of some sorts, whether it is Netflix or a lot of them have taken up some of these local services.
Yeah.
Do you use any of these the South African?
I've been using Showmax.
How have you found the content?
No, it's fine.
It's got everything you need.
It works well. I mean, my DSL line is a bit spotty, so I had a bit of buffering issues and stuff. But I've since moved to a faster connection, and it's fine. It works well. It's a good product.
And the quality of the streams
it's fine. It's fine.
You get nice HD.
It's HD. I think it's 720p. That's fine. I mean, DSTV is in 1080i, which is basically 720p quality. It's good. It's good, and I think the comp it's a good price too, $99 a month. And I think the competition, the level of competition in the space is good news for consumers, because I think the prices are going to stay
low. Definitely,
And there's real competition between the providers to offer the best content. What will be interesting is to see is which is going to be the first player to launch live television over streaming, because there's an obvious opportunity here to offer sport.
It needs to get to a point where those contracts for the sport broadcasting gets renewed, and then we need somebody with deep enough pockets, one of these players, to say, okay, no we're gonna bid. Isn't this what ESPN did, and all these ESPN and the hockey, they've taken over a lot of the broadcasting themselves because they want to keep it close to their chest. I mean, now you have, I don't know, I guess rugby unions or these rugby championship type organizations that sell the rights to an online player. That could be interesting.
Yeah, ESPN is an interesting one. I mean, I think it's feasible at some point that a regulator is going to force MultiChoice to unbundle SuperSport. They will never do it of their own volition. ESPN is an independent company, and they sell to all the other broadcasters in the US. That's their business model. If SuperSport was cut free,
SuperSport
as a separate
should
company,
become that. I mean,
they should sell their content to other providers, but MultiChoice won't do that because it's the broadcasting equivalent of what we call vertically integrated monopolies in the telco industry. It's not in their interest to unbundle SuperSport, and it would probably take regulatory intervention for it to happen.
But there's certainly going to be a time where this is going to pivot, and the bouquet style of MultiChoice's satellite offering may not be as lucrative as what it once was, and the market will be a lot more particular about how they want to consume media.
This is going to force MultiChoice to up its game as well.
Yeah.
And DSTV, I mean, the DSTV premium product is an expensive product, but it's also a great offering for what you get, especially if you enjoy sport.
They have improved a lot over recent years, especially with the introduction of the immediate from the US type of show.
And they've got lots of HD channels now. Must be 24 HD channels now on DSTV premium. And they've got great content. They've got the latest content, up-to-date content. But I think these VOD competitors are going to force them to be even smarter.
Because, I mean, what, they are the six of the price almost in many cases?
Yeah. It's less than. But an super, eighth of the price, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But SuperSport, I mean, a lot of people have already publicly said that, well, I mean, they don't voiced their opinion that they will pay a premium for SuperSport just to have that on its own.
Yeah, you know? And a lot of people don't want SuperSport.
Yeah, well, exactly.
And have to pay for it.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And they already have delivered that kind of service over there with their DSTV Online offering. So if you're a subscriber, you can log in online and view your sport online.
Yes.
If you're not close to your decoder. They can do it. It's just a matter of finding the right pricing model and saying, charge a premium. I mean, we know Apple gets away with it. And people will do it.
Yeah. But anyway, watch the VOD wars as they unfold. It's getting very interesting indeed. The other big announcement, I just want to touch on briefly because it's been over a week now since the announcement was made, but a very interesting announcement at the annual SatNAC conference from Telkom, which I attended at Hermanus early last week. And that was a speech delivered by the company's CEO, Sipho Maseko, who announced that Telkom is going to roll out fiber past 1 million fiber homes in the next 2.5 years. Very aggressive rollout target, though it must be emphasized this is past homes, not into homes. Presumably what he means is that you'll have the capability to take a fiber service if you're one of those million homes by March 2018, which is the deadline he set himself. I asked him whether he was being too ambitious after the presentation, and he said he doesn't believe he is being too ambitious, and in fact they think they may even exceed that target. So quite aggressive move from Telkom, and I think they're perhaps finally working up to the fact that they're losing neighborhoods at an increasing clip to their competition, and they need to do something about it. They say this is an effective doubling of their investment in fiber to the home.
Would they be offering these as open access, so a provider like...
In inverted commas, yes.
Okay.
So it'll be on a wholesale basis, so you like their DSL works at the moment. So you can get your internet service from any ISP you want.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, as long as... I think the enabling of the fiber is very important, and the more people get access to it, the better it is for everybody, without a doubt.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wish them luck. The more fiber in the ground, the better. But I think they've realized that they're facing a very significant challenge from these startup guys. And this is before the big mobile operators really start to kick into gear, because they've, you know, Vodacom and MTN also have big plans in the fiber to the home market. They're just taking quite a long time to get started, because they're big bureaucracies. And they ultimately probably will be the bigger challengers to Telkom, not the startup guys. I think companies like Vumatel and the other Link Africa and some of the smaller startup type fiber businesses are probably going to get bought out by the big operators at some point.
Yeah, probably.
I wouldn't be surprised if in 12 to 18 months from now Telkom announces it's buying Vumatel.
Because those guys have started securing a lot of the lucrative suburbs and or business parks and industries.
Exactly. They're branching out. They're not just doing the parks anymore. I see Vumatel has announced that they're going to be deploying fiber in Olivedale.
Nice.
So they're moving out of those really high end areas around.
I actually saw some guys as I was driving in this morning on the corner. They were marking off, and this is for fiber. They were marking off the curbs. Because what they do is obviously they need to get the distances for how to lay the fiber.
Oh, interesting. I know MTN is planning a deployment in this area, according to their map.
Oh, maybe that's so maybe it was them.
Could be MTN, or perhaps it's Telkom. Anyway, let's chat after the show about that. We can get some more information here. all right, cool. I think that wraps up the news for this week. So let's move on to our regular features. Our winner this week, I think for a change, they don't often get kudos. We'll give it to them this week, and that's ICASA for this document that they've published, this detailed document on how they intend to auction off the access to the broadband spectrum. They're clearly showing that they're ready to rock and roll as soon as the final policy from government comes, which has been promised by the end of March next year. So well done to ICASA for having the initiative to publish this document ahead of time. We don't have a loser this week, so let's move straight on to our picks of the week. What have you got this week?
There's an app that I've been using a lot recently, and we actually did a feature on them last year when they launched. It's an app called Appetite. But I haven't used it much after we wrote that article, and just over the last 6 months had a lot of opportunity to use it, and it's been performing very well, and I've never had a day's worth of issue with it. And a lot of restaurants in my area, actually in most areas, seem to be taking them up now.
I've seen I see their little cardboard posters thing on the counters at restaurants all over the place.
Now, I mean, what's quite strange is I used to think that there was a lot of the food delivery apps out there, you know, but there actually isn't. You know, yeah. Mr. Delivery is one, but they don't really have a decent enough app,
yeah.
And they're not as well integrated into all of these guys. Where some, and also they're third party, where Appetite works directly with a restaurant.
Yeah. You know,
something like Mr. Delivery just picks up and delivers, no
charge.
But what I like is obviously they've got a very nice selection of restaurants, so it knows where you are and it finds the restaurants closest to you. So even if you just use it to kind of see what's around you, but you can obviously pay online and get the guys to deliver. Some don't take online credit card payments, so you have to pay cash when they deliver.
Okay.
Or you can just simply place an order and go pick it up. So when I decide to go to the shop to get something else, I can place an order, and by the time I get there, it works well.
Okay.
Notifications are very good as well. You get notified when the order's been delivered. I've never had a problem where there's been a disconnect in communication, which is something that can happen from time to time if you work with these takeaway restaurants.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it. I think it works very well. So if you haven't tried it yet, certainly check it out. It's called appetite.co.za. The design, I think, could do a little bit of work. It's a bit old school in an app look and feel.
What's their business model? Do they charge a commission on delivery? Or
so? No, they charge. The restaurant pays a percentage
to them. Okay.
To them, yeah. So I mean,
so the price you see is the price you pay.
Yeah. There's no. I mean, you may have to pay an extra delivery charge if the restaurant decides to do a delivery charge. A lot of restaurants say within 5 km it's free,
yeah.
And more than that you can pay 10-15 rand.
Yeah.
So it's all part of the you know, once you go into it's not open for business. Okay, but you can, if you go into a restaurant, you can see that guy says under 5 kilometers, 20 rand.
Mm-hmm.
So you will just pay extra for that.
Yeah.
But the money goes to the restaurant, you pay the restaurant.
Right.
And Appetite's just a facilitator, which is quite
so
nice.
They take like a 2% or 3% cut.
Yeah, something like that, depending on how big the restaurant is, I take it.
Mm.
But good selection always. I see you've got a lot of restaurants in your area. So you can either call them directly too, which is great if you want to place an order. So they don't hide any information from
you. That's good, yeah.
But I've been and I've placed orders from restaurants that were quite far from me, well, seemingly far, and no problems. The guy just comes out and deliver. And
the click to call button next to a restaurant, is that to call the restaurant?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very
so
good.
So you can, like I said,
well, that's worth installing just to see what's around you. What do I feel like, even if you don't use Appetite to get this to fulfill the order?
And you'll see a lot of places don't accept online credit cards, so I can pay with credit, not that guy only delivers, but I have to pay cash. And I've used a lot for that kind of thing.
Mm. Presumably, those restaurants are also paying to be listed there.
I would imagine, but when I had the interview with him, no, they only took a percentage of it. They built this platform around, you know, giving access to these guys. Obviously, there's that percentage could be a lot, I guess. I don't know if they've changed their model.
I suppose if you have to pay, then not all restaurants will I mean, the model would be to have them as many restaurants as you can, have them all there.
Everybody needs to be on here and just use
that's
your platform.
True, yeah. And if you charge, then not everyone is going to be there.
Yeah, precisely. Mm. And there's a lot of small mom-and-pop type shops, which is what I like. There's not just a franchise on here.
Yeah.
In my area where I live in the parks, it's or at least their restaurants in the parks, a lot of them are not franchise.
So what's the nearest restaurant here?
Currylicious.
Currylicious.
Well, I mean, there's two or three of them. Rockamamas,
Currylicious.
Well, you can place order right now and they take credit cards.
Cool.
Yeah, Appetite.
Currylicious. I think I've actually had their food before. It's not bad.
Ah, so there's your lunch sorted.
Sorted. Excellent. Well, on that note. what does Jeremy Clarkson say in Top Gear? On that bombshell. Thanks for listening to the show. If you have any feedback, as always, we love to hear from you. Please drop us a mail, info@techcentral.co.za. Until next time, from Rachid and myself, cheers.
Ta-ta.